Welcome to the Emotional Curriculum with me, Dr. Sarah Taylor Whiteway. In a world that is full of stresses and where we see the mental health of children and young people deteriorating, we can sometimes be stuck for solutions. But there is a way that we know calms our nervous system and helps us to regulate, through the use of breath. Today, we speak to Jyoti Jo Manuel, the founder of Special Yoga. We talk about different ways of finding your breath, how these can help children with additional needs to regulate, and how regulating yourself might be the most important step to helping others. Jyoti, welcome to the Emotional Curriculum. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to talk about your organisation and practice, Special Yoga, which uses breath and breathing techniques to help children regulate. So before we talk more about that, it would be really interesting to hear about your journey into this area.
Well, my journey started in 1974, actually, when I, as a teenager, stepped into my first yoga class. And having come from a kind of background of quite a lot of trauma, it was one of those aha moments in my life where I thought, this is the path that's going to bring me the healing. And interestingly, my memory of that class, I have absolutely zero memory of the physical practice, which is the path that most people find. It was a very sensory experience for me. They were dressed in white, there were people chanting, there was incense, and they ended up sending me home with the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the spiritual texts of yoga, which is really about the madness of the mind and how to overcome it. So that was my first foray in, and I thought, oh, I like this, you know. And then the physical practice came later, and I was privileged to find a teacher when I moved to New York in 77. I found a yoga teacher quite quickly who took me in and kind of put me on my journey to both practice quite deeply and then go on to teach. In those days, there weren't so many teacher training programs. It was more when the teacher felt the student was ready, they kind of pushed you out there. So I was in that era. And then, of course, I felt like, oh, I don't know anything. And, you know, I don't know anything about physiology or anything like that or the anatomy. So I took a little bit of training in that when I came back to the UK in 87. And then I kind of stood out there and went out to teach. And I had never really had thought about teaching children or children with special needs or anything like that. It just kind of landed in my path. And so I realized that was the way I needed to go. And that was kind of the journey that life took me on. My oldest daughter was born in 1992. And by then I'd begun to teach in a couple of schools, and I'd seen kids who in those days there wasn't a diagnosis of autism or ADHD or anything like that. It was just naughty children, really. And so I witnessed all these kids who were, you know, clearly probably would be diagnosed today, kind of fiddling and kind of wanting to climb out their bodies and couldn't sit still and chewing pencils and fidgeting and, you know, all the things that would irritate most teachers, really, and was irritating them too. And I thought, well, I know them. That's me. So I thought, well, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I do know what has helped me. And if I can find a way to make it child accessible more than anything, then that's what I'm going to do. And it worked.
It's always really interesting to hear about how people find their passions. And when you set up Special Yoga, it was one of the first organisations to bring this practice into schools. So how was the context back then?
Well, when we opened Special Yoga in 2002, there really was very little available for children and very little available for yoga in schools. Obviously, from the late 80s to the early 2000s, that was quite a big jump of people beginning to bring some awareness to the therapeutic benefits of yoga. You know, it was just, but it was still, there were still a lot of people who thought it was a kind of weird religious cult and, you know, not sure about it. So there was a lot of pathways where we needed to go and prove that it worked, really. I went into the school, in fact, which the school both my kids went to. And all the kids at the end of the class lay down, there was, you know, 30 children in the class, you know, And we did a session and they all lied down and they were all still. And I remember the deputy head coming in and literally she had tears in her eyes because she never had thought, she never even considered that that might be possible for the children that were finding it so difficult to cope.
And when you were talking about your journey into yoga, you were talking about noticing those fidgety, restless children in school, and you've mentioned and used the word stillness, and another word which is really important to your practice is regulation. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about this and what this is.
Sure. I mean, I think everybody walking on the planet today has a level of kind of disturbance in their autonomic nervous system because we're so habituated to living with different levels of anxiety depending on who we are and what we know and what our experiences have been as well. And when we start to balance the autonomic nervous system, which we can do with breath, but mainly with our breathing actually, but the pathway to breath might be through movement, it might be through massage, it might be through sound, or it might just be through practicing different breath practices. When you start to then begin to balance the autonomic nervous system, then you find stillness. And then all of a sudden, I mean, certainly my experience has been very much of you find parts of your body that were tense that you didn't even know were tense because you were so habituated to living with that tension or that anxiety or that discomfort, because that becomes your norm. So you don't even, there's not as an association with it because that's your norm. And I think that today, even more so than ever, you know, we were having a mental health crisis in youth prior to COVID anyway, and add COVID onto that and the insecurity of the world as it stands at the moment. The adults around the children are frenetic. Everybody's frenetic. Everybody's scared. Everybody's worried. Everybody's anxious at some level about, you know, what happens next. For the children who have less understanding, even less understanding than we do as adults about what, you know, what the world is doing, the anxiety levels are off the Richter scale. What very much I've learned over the years of doing this work, and I suppose part of what makes special yoga unique and different, is that we put a lot of focus into you as the adult, because when we regulate ourselves, we then create a circle of, you know, an emotional circle of safety to allow the child or the children to be able to relax enough to trust that the practices would work and to be able to regulate themselves, because the energy field creates safety. And when we're very anxious, we don't feel safe.
And one of the things that really struck me about your practice is the need for the people working with the young people to regulate themselves first. And I think sometimes that's something we miss in trying to teach young people these skills, is not making sure that we're regulated first.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to a teacher the other day, you've chosen a very caring profession, and this is for all teachers, really, or all therapists, or anybody that's chosen a caring profession at whatever level that is you've done it because you care. But what we haven't been brought up with is to understand that if we fill ourselves up first, we have so much more to give, because so many of us are responding to trying to fix things that are out of our control to fix anyway, and depletes our own wells of resource and reserves. And then we're trying to give from an empty pot. But actually, that children learn from the models around them rather than what we say. So if we're not modeling good behavior, the children are not going to be able to really absorb that at any useful level. And I just think, you know, sometimes if we could just imagine how much more we could give if we were filled up.
And you also mentioned that idea of us not realizing that we're in this state of anxiety and stress, you know, when we're dealing with things almost perpetually in our life. So I imagine that your practice focuses on teaching this self-awareness as well. This is probably a really valuable part of learning these skills for people who just really aren't aware of this.
Well, I think we're unaware of it. I also think we've been, generally, most people have been raised to give out there before you give in here. You know, and lots of people think, oh no, I can't take time for myself because it's selfish, or I can't take time for myself because I've got too much to do out there, and I've got to fix this, and I've got to do that, and I've got to do the other. And so we get neglected, actually. And it's also part of our social background, I suppose, of how we've been raised. I mean, I wasn't raised to believe that my state mattered. I was raised to believe that I had to serve out there. And I think that it's the wrong way around, because if we fill this up, then we're so much more useful out there.
Yeah.
So I think it's like a reprogramming of a social norm, actually.
And you use the term their autonomic nervous system, which might be familiar to some of the people listening. This is the thing that seems to have brought the science into the practice of yoga and mindfulness and breath techniques. So I was wondering if you could give us just a quick overview of what the autonomic nervous system is and what it does.
Okay, so I'm not a scientist, so I can't come to this from a science perspective. My understanding is that we all have a nervous system that's connected, that, you know, in a weird way connects our body and our brain. And if you think about it, your lungs and your brain are talking to each other all the time. So as soon as you go into a fear state or an angry state or a frustrated state or even very sad state, you tend to kind of hold your breath, right? And then, of course, the brain will continue that saga, that story, and keep you in that loop. And it's not until you can regulate your breathing and that the message then gets sent up to the brain to say, oh, it's okay, you can relax now. So the breath becomes your a mechanism for balancing the nervous system that feeds back into your thoughts, actually.
So breath is this really key element. And what I found really interesting was you mentioned before that breath can come from lots of different sources. It can come from just doing the exercise, but it can come from movement or from sound. And I imagine these are all things that become part of your practice.
Absolutely. I think a lot of times when you're very anxious and your breath somewhere kind of here and very shallow and you're in that very anxious mental state, it's almost sometimes impossible to be able to then connect to your breath and regulate it. Because one of the things that happens, of course, when you're in that mad thinking mind is you've disconnected yourself from your body energetically. Obviously, your head and your body are still connected on a physical plane, but energetically, you've disconnected. And I've seen anxiety get worse because I can't find my breath. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. So, you know, sometimes if we just were to hum, the vibration of the humming will create a vibration in the back of the throat that goes straight back into the nervous system to calm it. Also, when you're making sound, you're breathing out, but you're not aware of breathing out. So the focus point is different. And then from a massage perspective, you've got varying points on your hands, your legs, your feet, your chest, your head, that actually when you massage them can release different coping chemicals into the brain, which will then impact the nervous system. Sometimes they undo block tension in the body, particularly around the respiratory system. And sometimes you suddenly see children going, ah, it's almost like you've unknotted a knot through massage. And movement also can open up the respiratory pathway. So if I take a stretch, I open up through the sides of my body. So any kind of tension and held tension in my lungs has the possibility of just relaxing and expanding. That's what I mean by there's different pathways to helping people to find or not even find their breath, to breathe more deeply.
And it's so interesting because I think there's an assumption that it mainly focuses on breath, but there's so many different ways, as you've explained, to release that tension. And so for schools that have taken on board and used the practice and engaged with special yoga throughout the whole school, what impact and what difference have they seen in their children, young people and their staff?
Well, you've got kind of two segments of schools here. You've got the mainstream where you've got a lot of special needs populations, a lot of which won't be diagnosed because they're either on the pathway to diagnosis, you know, that horrible 3, 4, 5 year wait, or their needs haven't been picked up. And then you've got the special needs schools. And so in the special needs schools, what we found is that the children are meeting their targets, which could be around communication, engagement, attention, you know, ability to stay on task, regulating themselves, particularly in the autistic populations, and not only that populations, but also any of the populations where there's very high anxiety. So those are the kinds of pictures we're seeing out of specialist education. And the teachers are realizing that when they calm down themselves, that they're then able to meet the children's needs in a better way because they're more present. And so then the targets get doubly met, and even targets they didn't even think were there got met. So we get beautiful feedback. And then in the mainstream environment, because you've got such high levels of anxiety, the feedback is the children are able to attend better, classrooms are calmer, there's more regulation, and they're learning better, and they're feeling better.
And really, one of the narratives I'm hearing again and again from schools at the moment is obviously a lack of resources, a lack of people power to put in place these interventions. But this feels like it could be done for whole classes, a kind of very little actually resource being spent.
It's really cost effective. Yeah. It's really basic. And if you were to get the children prepared, and I've believed this for many, 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 many years, is that if you took 10 minutes every morning, you know, I know you've got this very tight curriculum and you've got to do this, and you've got to achieve that, and you've got to achieve the other. But actually, before you even get there, what we need to do is get the children into the state, into the optimum state where they're able to learn. So a 10-minute practice would reset all the children when they came in the mornings and prepare them for learning. And then during the day, you could drop in practices. So you don't need a yoga mat. You don't need to do hour-long practices. You can drop in throughout the day different practices of movement, breath, massage, even making sounds, to just keep the children into that state where they're in the optimum state for learning and functioning and thriving. And in order for that to happen, however, the teachers also need to be there. So, you know, if they can start to practice together, you would create a calm environment for everybody to be able to function optimally in. It seems to me that's got to be the way forwards.
And I was also really interested in the work you mentioned in special schools, because some people might be thinking that children that attend those schools are going to have more difficulty accessing the practice. So what is your response to that?
I think over the years, you know, when we had a special yoga first started, we had a yoga centre, and parents of either profoundly autistic children or children with PMLD or complex physical differences would call and say, well, my child can't this, that, and the other. How on earth are you going to get them on a yoga mat? Or how on earth are you going to calm them down? Because they don't attend for 5 seconds. And so my answer to it is bring them in. Let's have a look and see what's possible. And generally, we would get these children to attend and to calm down, because the practices are so focused on calming the nervous system and bringing peace and bringing balance. And our practitioners have been trained in regulating themselves first and foremost, so that they are creating that really calm environment around the child or children. And that's really where it feeds from. So it really does work. And obviously you have to adapt practices for a child who can't lift their arms themselves and who are twisted up, and our children who are more on the autistic spectrum or ADHD and are on the ceilings or can't get off the floor or whatever it is. Of course you adapt the practices, but at the end of the day, it's still the same. It's just an adaptation of meeting your needs so that we can support you.
And so for teachers that are really interested in using this in their classrooms, what do you offer that they can sign up for?
Well, we offer inset trainings, which can be full-day trainings. I actually prefer doing the twilight ones, because I think that if you run a series of twilight ones, you can work with the teachers to help them to deal with resistances that they might find to, you know, their own breath, their own pathways. And also, we have teachers coming into all of our courses. So we have special yoga for CPPMLD. We have special yoga for Special Children Foundation. We have special yoga for autism, ADHD. And then we're just starting to work with the Breath Body Mind Foundation in the States to offer the introductory program to the Breath Body Mind adapted practices as a collaboration between us and them that are for mainstream education. Again, based on the fact that if you can regulate your adults using the same tools that they would then be able to pass on to the children. So it's not like one set of practices for the adults and one set for the children. It's using the same practices and adapting them. And one of the things that we definitely hear back is that also that when the adults are regulated, they can listen to the children better and they can meet their needs better.
And that practice seems so important for those working in schools at the moment, needing to take time for themselves or learning how to de-stress, because of the amount of pressure and the feelings in school at the moment really feels like exhaustion and difficulty managing and coping, really.
You know, I think there's a lot of yoga for children out there that's very playful, that isn't focused on self-regulation, that's more focused on let's get the children into different positions and let's take them on journeys. And that's lovely and fine. But actually, if it doesn't calm the children down and give the children tools that they can take off the mat, then for me, it's not useful. It might be a nice activity for an hour or two, but what yoga offers are lifelong practices. Mm-hmm. And if we can find a way to offer those in a useful way that are accessible and work, then, you know, you've got it. Also, there's a perception that yoga for some people, I can't do yoga because I can't touch my toes, and I can't do yoga because I've got a bad back. And, you know, none of that matters, because if you can breathe, you can do some level of breath, body, mind practices that are going to enhance the quality of your life.
And so to really practice what we preach and give you an example of what it feels like to be regulated, we've recorded a very short energizing script for you that involves tapping and breathing and will hopefully help you to regulate. You can find the link to this YouTube video in the podcast description. And I would really encourage you to pause the recording now and take just 4 minutes to try out this script. And hopefully, if you've taken that 3 minute break to watch the video, then you'll be feeling energized. And Jyoti, for those who are doing that and feel a difference now, what would be the difference between dipping in and out of these practices and taking it as a lifelong approach, as you've mentioned before?
Well, I think, you know, what stress and anxiety and busy lives do is they deplete your energy. And so if we can just keep our, even if we don't fill our tanks all the way up and we just fill up so that we're above empty all the time, then we've got the best resources to move with. It's like a car, you know, the car stops if you run out of petrol, right? You know, but what happens for us is we go into overdrive and then you're burning yourself out. And that's when we get sick, we feel worse, we get depressed. I mean, all of the kind of picture of both mental health and physical health actually depletes considerably when we're running on empty. So if we can just keep our tank filled up a bit, you know, so that it's below empty all the time, then we've always got something to run with, you know. And if you can fill it up even more, then it's even better.
So it's really about keeping ourselves regularly topped up, basically. And I wanted to ask a little bit more about some of the projects that you're doing. I know you're doing something with Barnardo's at the moment.
So the Breath Body Mind Foundation were hired by Barnardo's in Ireland to train up some of their team, and they brought me in to support them and work with them. So it's sort of become a special yoga come Breath Body Mind project. And the idea there was to train up their staff to reduce the staff stress. They've got approximately 450 people work for Barnardo's in Ireland, and then give them practices that they can go on and share with the parents, with the educators, with children themselves, whoever they're really working with. There's lots of different divisions of Barnardo's for vulnerable children. What they're noticing is that the staff are in much better shape. They're much more resourced now in terms of being able to provide practices and whatever else they're doing also with the children and families and education. We're at the stage now in the course where they're now delivering it to the kids, you know, and they're finding it's really making a difference. So we can work with big teams, we can work with educators, we can work with schools, we can work, you know, however people want to work.
So for those educators listening into this, if there was something you wanted them to take away from our conversation today, what would it be?
I think more than anything, to acknowledge yourself being the amazing person that you are and all that you do, and know that if you could just take care of yourself just a little bit better, you would be able to do so much more.
And what an inspiring note to end on. Jyoti, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. You'll find links to all the courses that Special Yoga and Jyoti offer in our podcast description and a link to the website. If you like the episode, then please do subscribe, and you can follow us on Twitter at emcurriculum. You can contact us on theemotionalcurriculum@gmail.com. See you soon.